welcome back to the CritMedic Podcast, where we bring together the worlds of critical care and pre-hospital care. I'm your host, Dominic Walonczak. Wow, it's been far too long since my last podcast. I was originally planning on taking a week off in between podcasts, which became 2 weeks and then 3 weeks. And then what began as an exception became the rule. Plus, I've been working on a project that I hope will significantly improve the way we practice and learn EKGs. I'll give you some teasers later on. But in the meanwhile, I have another scenario for you folks. I've come across this very scenario, but had a very different outcome, and we'll talk about why in a moment. So here's your scenario. You respond to the home of a 56-year-old male who had been incoherent on the phone with a family member. So this is called in by a third-party caller. As you arrive, you note that there is no answer at the door, but the front door is unlocked and you can cautiously make entry. Inside, you find the patient lying on the couch. He is conscious and tells you to get out of his house. But as he does so, he's slurring his words. After a brief exchange of words, it is readily apparent that he's altered mental status. Using your verbal judo, you de-escalate the situation and gain his cooperation for an evaluation. He's not able to provide you much information or history because of his state. But you do notice some diabetic medications lying around. Additionally, you note an IV pole and pump with which you are not familiar, sitting disconnected. It has a bag of medication labeled Extraneal hanging, empty. You pull out your glucometer and check the blood glucose. 148 milligrams per deciliter. Well, that's not the problem. Suspecting some sort of acute neural or cerebrovascular issue, or potentially a medication reaction, you transport him to the hospital. They utilize their point-of-care glucometer and get similar results. The patient continues to get worse in the ED. He goes unresponsive and is intubated. A CT scan of the head comes back negative. The ED starts broad-spectrum antibiotics, suspecting sepsis. That's when the results from the lab come back. Lab glucose value is 18 milligrams per deciliter. After some D50, the patient regains consciousness and is extubated. He is admitted for observation and ultimately discharged with no negative sequela. What happened? How could two different point-of-care blood glucose meters have gotten it so wrong? Well, to answer that, we need to talk about glucometers and how they work, and why it is critical that you know your equipment inside and out, to make you the best clinician possible. Because sometimes we're only as good as our tools, and our knowledge of them. Early glucometers were largely colorimetric, or chemstrips, meaning you applied blood to a strip, developed it, and the resulting color corresponded to an approximate glucose value. Modern glucometers employ a somewhat different method. They rely on measuring the charge created when the glucose is oxidized or catalyzed. The first generation used an enzyme called glucose oxidase. Who would have figured, I know. To oxidize glucose into gluconolactone. This electrical charge is measured and then referenced to an associated blood glucose concentration, which is then ultimately what gets displayed. Newer glucometers tend to rely on a different enzyme, glucose dehydrogenase, but the principle is the same. This newer enzyme yields more sensitive results, but as a downside is more susceptible to interfering reactions with other substances. The glucose dehydrogenase is usually selective to a particular cofactor, of which there are three competing ones on the market. Pyroloquinoline quinone, flavin adenine dinucleotide, and nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. But everyone calls them PQQ, FAD, and NAD for short. Because no one has time to say pyroloquinoline quinone dependent glucose dehydrogenase in casual conversation. So, that's one part of the puzzle here in this scenario, but it probably doesn't make much sense to you without the other part of the puzzle. That other part of the puzzle comes from the medication and pump that was hanging in the scenario. Extraneal is a solution that's used in what's known as peritoneal dialysis. Peritoneal dialysis is where they infuse higher osmolality fluids into the perineum and allow materials to diffuse through the membrane before being drained out again. This is less efficient than traditional hemodialysis and has a slightly higher associated infection risk, but it does result in fewer swings in blood chemistry. This is often while the patient sleeps, which is great at saving time and affording the patient greater freedom. In 2004, a worldwide survey found this was used 11% of the time as compared with traditional hemodialysis. Except in Mexico, interestingly enough, that percentage is as high as 75%. Now, it would probably help if I told you that Extranil is a trade name of a solution containing icodextrin. Sounds a little bit similar to dextrose, doesn't it? That's because icodextrin is a cornstarch-derived glucose polymer. Studies have shown that up to 40% of icodextrin is absorbed into the peritoneal lymphatic system, ending up in central circulation. These are metabolized into maltose and other simple sugar glucose polymers. These are not used in the Krebs cycle for the generation of ATP. However, these will interact with the pyroloquinoline quinone and some of the flavonadenine dinucleotide variants of glucose dehydrogenase tests, as well as the glucose dioxyreductase tests. The only point of greater glucose method known not to have any reaction to it is the nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide glucose dehydrogenase, or the NAD one. It's this interaction that prompted the FDA in 2009 to issue a warning on the matter. It's not limited to icodextrin in peritoneal dialysis applications. Certain non-glucose sugars, including maltose, xylose, and galactose, can cause similar false readings. The FDA has gone so far as to suggest that facilities should probably get away from the pyroloquinoline quinone-based point-of-care test strips altogether. So, what's the point of all this? Well, how well do you know your equipment? Do you know what kind of glucometer you have on hand? Because this isn't a far-fetched scenario. This was a call that I ran a few years back, except my situation turned out very differently. We had a NAD-based glucometer, which did detect the hypoglycemia. So it was really a non-event. And all this because of the whim of our purchasing manager who happened to buy this type of glucometer. How many people would have walked into that situation unaware of the potential landmine they were about to step on? What would you do if you had a pyroloquinoline quinone-based glucometer? Well, you have two options. You could try using the patient's glucometer, because any provider worth his salt, and who wants to avoid a malpractice lawsuit, would make sure that their patient has a glucometer for their use, if they're a diabetic, that isn't impacted by the peritoneal dialysis solution. Or, if that's not an option, I would suggest considering the empiric dextrose administration in these patients. I don't want to say, treat your patient, not the monitor, because I hate that expression. Rather, treat the patient in the clinical context of all diagnostic information, fully understanding the limitations of your equipment. But that's not catchy enough to put on an EMS t-shirt. In the scenario that I presented, there's been case studies of similar presentations where it wasn't caught in the hospital because they used a point-of-care PQQ glucose monitor. Some of these patients had really negative outcomes up to and including death, which is generally a bad thing. So that's all for this episode. I leave you with one final task when you get to your rig. Find your glucometer and figure out what kind of method it uses for determining glucose value. Do you have a PQQ, FAD, or NAD-based glucometer? It may save your patient some trouble down the line. If nothing else, knowing some trivia about your glucometer will make you the coolest kid at your EMS station. Well, maybe not, but still, knowledge is an incredibly useful tool. And what are we without our tools? Until next time, Crit Medic listeners, keep thinking differently.